Zoom, and between the various populations, we will hopefully get through this year, as long as my computer does not bail. Okay, so our topic is, where does Shemitah apply? Or Shvi'it Begvulot Eretz Yisrael Ubesvivoteha, as I put on the top of the source sheet. And there are three topics that I want to deal with here. Number one, a side note that we didn't address last week, regarding the issue of spaces that were left for the needy during Shemitah. That is actually a little bit problematic. I'm going to turn off my video for a bit and see if that helps my signal. I may come back to it later. So we talked about leaving spaces for the needy so that they somehow will benefit during Shemitah. But the Torah presents a promise, right? The Torah promises, Hashem says, I'm going to give you a bracha during Shemitah, and the land will produce enough for you. So why don't you trust the bracha of Shemitah? Why are you making enactments for the needy during Shemitah? That's question number one. Question number two, more to the point for this week, is what is the status of lands outside of Israel altogether? We talked about lands taken by Olei Mitzrayim, lands taken by Olei Bavel. What about lands outside of Israel where Jews live? And specifically, we're going to talk about Aram, Syria. We'll talk about Mitzrayim, about Egypt. And then the biggest part of this year, we said last time that lands taken by the Jews when they came out of Egypt gained Kedusha Rishona, they gained initial sanctity. And if they weren't retaken by Olei Bavel, the Jews who came out of Persia, then they still have Shemitah Midrabanan, right? We had some discussion on what that means, that Kedusha, Svichin allowed, not allowed. But fundamentally, what are the boundaries of the land taken by the Jews coming out of Egypt? What exactly was Eretz Yisrael at that point? So we start out with the question I didn't address last week, and I was looking at the Derech Amunah on something, and it triggered something in my mind to remember that I had discussed this once. I had completely forgotten last week, or I would have tried to fit it in then. But why are you leaving spaces for the needy during Shemitah? If Hashem promised, "Vitzivisi as birchasi lachem," the question does not only apply to the cities they omitted that we talked about last week. The same question appears in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Chavav Amid Aleph, in which the people are told, poku v'zaru b'shvi'is, go out and plant during Shemitah, and there are various explanations for why they are planting, but basically there seems to have been a government demand for taxes during Shemitah, and the people would not be able to meet it, and so they were told, go out and plant during Shemitah. And Rashi said that's because Shemitah was only a derabbanan at that point. The Tosfos HaRosh says no, it was because it was pikuach nefesh, it was saving a life. So again, why aren't you just trusting that everything is going to be okay? Similarly, Tosfos in Gittin Lamed Vav Mebeis says they did not enact Yovel the way they enacted a Shemitah midirabanan. They never enacted a Yovel midirabanan because it would just be too much for people. It's too hard. But again, you were promised. So I wanted to show you several different answers for this. Answer number one comes from the Sma in Choshen Mishpat in Samach Zayin Beis, commenting on Samach Zayin Aleph, which I brought you on the source sheet. In source Aleph on the source sheet, the Shulchan Aruch writes that Shemitah's Ksafim, Shemitah of loans, does not apply biblically unless Yovel applies. Midrabanan, it applies Bizman HaZebachol Makom. It applies today everywhere. Why did the rabbis enact that Shemitah's Ksafim should apply, that loans that are in default should be annulled? So as the Sma notes, that Torah should not be forgotten. You don't want people to forget the laws of Shemitah. And then he goes on to talk about what they did create and what they did not create, and they didn't create Yovel. And he says, if you take a look in bold, in the third line in Source Beis, he says, when Tosfo says that it would have been too much for people to create Yovel, did davka bizman shaya shmita v'yovel noeg min ha-Torah ha'isa mekuyemas ben ha-bracha. He says the bracha that Hashem promises only applies when Shemitah and Yovel are de'oraisa, not when they are de'rabanan. Why should that be true? So the Rav Adi Yosef brings a piece from Rav Yosef Engel in the part that I brought you in Source Gimel. He says the Torah is used as the foundation for the world. Hashem creates the world, istakel b'oraisa u'bara alma, and so on. So Hashem looks in the Torah and says, once every 7 years, you're not allowed to plant, and I'm promising that I'm going to help them. Check. However, that only applies where it applies in the Torah. Only the de'oraisa is built in. That's a fascinating concept. It's entirely counterintuitive, at least for me. I would have said Hashem also created the authority of the Rabbanan, right? According to the Rambam, it's practically that every Rabbanan is a Daraisa anyway. So why is it that should be so? Not only that, the Chazon Ish has a problem. Chazon Ish in Shvi'is Yudches Dalid says that won't help in terms of what we talked about last week. We said last week they kept from consecrating some land when they came back. That land they consecrated would have been De'oraisa, right? Assuming you had Kol Yosheveha Aleha. That would have been De'oraisa Kedusha Shnia. So I don't understand why it is. I mean, Rav Sammy is going to talk about next week whether we ever had Kol Yosheveha Aleha, and therefore maybe not. Maybe it would have been a Derabban on the entire base, second base HaMikdash. But but he says that this answer won't work. So a few other answers that we could float here. Rav Cook wrote a letter, which is quoted here in the Abiyah Omer. So I just brought it in that same tshuva in Abiyah Omer. His tshuva is discussing something that I'm hoping Rav Sammy is going to get to next week about Nehemiah's shvua and the question of whether the Jews all accepted Shemitah in the time of Nehemiah. That's really the focus of his tshuva. But in this piece, in it, he quotes you the letter of Rav Cook, which I brought you in source Gimel, in which Rav Cook offers you a couple of rationales. He says, first of all, ein anu ra'uyim adayin shehizgala befoal, o mipnei nefilas hador, o mipnei asfeko shebukuf hashmita v'chule. He says, we're not going to get this active revelation of a bracha. He says, number one, because the people sin, there are nefilas hador, right? And later on, he has efshur sheyigram hachet lekapcha. It could be that chet will cause the problem, and that's a quote from the Chazon Ish. So one problem is that it may be true, Hashem promised, you observe Shemitah, you'll get brachos, but maybe that doesn't apply if you're also not observing something else. That could be. Or alternatively, the other idea that Rav Cook suggests is, we don't even know how to observe Shemitah properly. We're doing the best we can. But we have machlokas on all sorts of topics. So since there are sfeikos about whether we're observing Shemitah properly, therefore, you can't necessarily expect a bracha. Last two answers from the Chazon Ish that I also brought in Source Gimel are that either the bracha is for the klal, not for the individual, but the bracha is actually for the collective. Hashem is not promising that every single Jew is going to have enough food to eat. Or alternatively, because, and this is the most fascinating out of all of them, the Chazon Ish also suggests, and I actually didn't bring it on here. I didn't bring this one from the Chazon Ish on here, but look in the Chazon Ish himself, in Shvi'is Yudches Dalid, I should have brought it. He says, Beis Din is obligated to carry out hishtadlus for the needy. You know, we're all obligated to do our best. So best for the Beis Din includes that they should... that they should make their best effort for the needy, which includes takanos, which includes enactments like this. So I'm going to try to start my video again because I feel bad now that nobody's on the video at all. It's just four boxes. Notwithstanding the live people here, but people on the screen should also be good. And hopefully my computer can take it. So that's just addressing the question from last week. I think it's an interesting issue. And I think it has ramifications that can probably be used in a drasha or two at some point this year. Jewish Mitzvah again. The recycling is also a value. In any case, on to the geography. So first, a note on geographic identification, which I believe Reb Chaim addressed as well when he did his Chabura. But the Chazon Ish makes a comment, which I brought you here in Source Dalid. V'adayin ein anu betuchim im efshar lismoch al mapas ha'aretz. He says, I'm not so sure we can depend on the maps that we have and the geographic identifications that are in them. Why? Because the places have changed. They weren't so careful when they looked at what our sages said, what Chazal said. He says there are places that you're just working with guesswork for. And then you have the Derech Emunah, Reb Chaim Knievsky, who in Source Hay says, you know, often they're just working with the names that the Arab population has on a particular site. And they say, oh, okay, they will be Sameich on the Shmos Aravim. He says that's hardly a halachic system. Not to mention, Rav Efrati notes, I didn't bring it on the sheet, in Hagvul Hadromi Mizrachi Shel Eretz Yisrael, which is a very catchy name for an article. I'm sorry he took it. But he says also secular researchers are also very clear that they are uncertain. They don't make claims that the site is the same site for sure. So in general, when we're dealing with some of these issues, like we're going to talk about what Ma'alei Akrabim is, It isn't as simple as saying, well, here's a spot that people call Male Akrabim. I guess that's Male Akrabim. Far from it. Okay. So last week, we talked about Eiver HaYarden, the northern and southern parts of Eiver HaYarden. So we're not revisiting that this week. What I do want to start with, in terms of our second question, lands outside of Israel, is to talk about Egypt. What is the status of Shemitah in Egypt? So in the Rambam, in Hilchos Trumos, in source Vav on the sheets, the Rambam writes, HaTrumos VaMaisros in Noah Gimen HaTorah LeBeretz Yisrael. He says, Truma and Maiser only apply it biblically in Israel. Beis HaMikdash. No, Beis HaMikdash is not the point. Dot, dot, dot. And then he says, regarding Egypt, V'chachamim harishonim iskinu shiu Noah goes af be'eretz Mitzrayim u'be'eretz Amon u'mov neshem svivos la'eretz Yisrael. Early Chachamim said, Truma and Maiser should apply in Egypt as well. Why? They're close to Israel. And in fact, the Nevi'im even extended to Shinar, the Sumeria, because that's Israel and Jews go there. However, what about Shemitah? So you're perplexed, I am. Right. So the question is how you define Shinar. Meaning, if you look at like ancient Near East scholars, they actually argue that Babel and Shinar are two different places, classically, going back to Tanakh. And that's why I translated Shinar not as Babel, but as Sumeria. Right. Which I didn't look it up now, but when I gave Shir on Daniel years ago and Ezra and Nehemiah, I think I looked into it then. I thought Shinar was southwest Babel, but I could be remembering that wrong. But look at the Rambam regarding Egypt in Source Zion. Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel Dalet Chav Zion. He says first about Surya, which we're going to come back to. So I'm going to skip his Surya comment. Second line in Source Zion: Amon u'Moav u'Mitzrayim v'Shinar Avol b'Shem Chayavos b'Maisos midivrayhem ein Shvius noheges bohen. Shemitah will not apply there. True and Meiser, yes. Shemitah, no. Why not? What's the issue? So when you look at the comment regarding Surya in the first half of Source Zion, he says the reason why they made the decree regarding Surya, that you're not allowed to work it during Shemitah, as we'll see, was because they were worried, they're worried that Jews might say, you know, it's a lot easier in Surya. I don't have to follow all these rules. I'm going to go there, not just during Shemitah. They will settle there. That's not the Rambam's invention. That's the Yerushalmi in Shriya's Perek Vav Halacha Beis. So why don't I have the same concern for Mitzrayim? Why don't we say the same thing and say, maybe Jews are going to go to Mitzrayim? So you could say, well, because after all, the Rambam knows, Hashem said, you're not allowed to live in Egypt. So maybe that's why there's no concern that Jews aren't going to live there. The Rambam is certainly aware of that. Aside from him himself, in a Hanami, but you know that letter doesn't exist. The idea that he signed his name saying the one who violates three averos every day, that's not true. We have letters that the Rambam signed, courtesy of the Kairo Geniza, and that is not found in the letters. The second idea that I would give is simply that Egypt is more remote. It's a lot easier to go and settle in Syria than it is to go settle in Mitzrayim, right? Not to mention they had a government. I mean, what Syria had is not clear. But the Derech Amuna gives you a different answer. He says in Source Ches, Ein Shvius no Heges Bohen, Shemitah does not apply in Mitzrayim, K'dei sheyismechu aniyim aleihen b'shvius, so that the needy will rely on Egypt. So he said Syria is out for Avodah, but Egypt we're going to allow. And then he says, V'od mishum d'shvius kasha lamod b'zeh, lo gazu chacham misham al zeh. He says, because Shemitah is really hard, observing Shemitah is hard. Apparently, in Syria, we're still going to decree it, but at least they said for Egypt, we're not going to. So Egypt is not a Shemitah concern. Maybe you have other concerns, but Shemitah is not a concern there. What about Syria? So first, an interesting note that I came across. If Yaakov Emdin, for some reason, the Moruk Tzia to Orachayim Shin Vav, decides to comment on Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I think it may be because in Shin Vav we talk about writing on Shabbos for the sake of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. that whole thing from the Gemara in Gittin about having a non-Jew do the bill of sale and all of that. By the way, everyone online, you should feel free to chime in and comment and ask. Don't be shy. Even though there are people live here, you're here live also. So they have a Tamad Veikim. So they, at least as long as the single holds out, then they're no longer Veikim. But in any case, in the Morg Tzia, in our Chaim Shinvav, he includes Kuntres Begeder Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And he says that Avraham was not given Aram as part of Israel, Aram, including that area that we call Syria, because Aram is a descendant of Shem. So they're also family. That's why we don't get Aram. However, if you look in Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud, coming up in Toronto Torah in several weeks, right after after Sukkot, in our journey through Tanakh, you will find that David conquers Syria after hostilities with Ammon. And I brought you the psukim in here in source tests and the back and forth, and we're not going to go into it now. I just wanted you to actually have the psukim of Tanakh. At least they should be on the source sheet. But the story was that Aram had come to help Ammon against David. David ends up in a war with Aram that he never was looking for. And he ends up conquering Syria, what we call there Aram Sova. So that land becomes David's property, so to speak, and it's what we call kibush yachid. It is private conquest. However, that does not make it part of the land of Israel, and the Sifri explains why in source Yud, and he says the following, and I brought it for you, and I even bolded parts of it, but I think in the interests of time, I'm going to sum up what the Sifri there says. He says, the order in the Torah is first, v'rishtem goyim gedolim v'atzumim mikem. First, in the land of Israel, you will take the land from these nations that are greater and mightier than you. And then, kol ha-makom asher tidroch kaf raglechem, wherever you walk, shall be yours. That's the order that it's supposed to be. Keep in mind, as we said at one point in Shir last year, none of this was what was supposed to be. What was supposed to be, as Rav Kook writes, was we are model citizens and we convince everybody to become Gerei Toshav and there's no war and there's no conquest and everybody goes to follow Hashem and everything is nice. That's what was supposed to happen. Then you have this Egel, the golden calf, and we descend. And at that point, we're no longer worthy. And at that point, instead of impressing everybody, we end up in the situation where we have to fight everybody. So you're supposed to settle the land first and get rid of Avodah Zarah there, as the Sifri writes. Make sure that you get Avodah Zarah, idolatry, out of the land. And don't start engaging in ventures abroad before you've taken care of that. As the Netziv writes on the Sifri, you don't want to leave Israel with Avodah Zarah. And you certainly don't want Israel to be subsidiary to other lands. You take land elsewhere and there's no Avodah Zarah there, right? And Israel still has Avodah Zarah. That's entirely wrong. That should not be done. So what happens if you conquer land outside of Israel after taking Israel? Then the mitzvahs will apply. Because the Pasuk says, yihyeh, it shall be, right? In the middle part of the Sifri, for those who are looking at the Sifri, the lachem yihyeh, it shall be yours, but yihyeh, it shall be, the mitzvos of the land will apply to those other places. Then why don't they apply in Aram Naharayim and Aram Tzova, thanks to David? Because David went outside of Israel first before taking the Yebusi near Yerushalayim. And that's the end of that Medrash. So that's why it doesn't gain the status of Israel. And the Rambam rules that way in Hilchos Trumas Perek Aleph, Halachos Gimel and Dalet. You see it here in Source Yud Aleph. Syria is like Israel for certain things, not like Israel for other things. And as far as Truma, Meiser, and Shvius, that's what we're going to now need to address. So what the Rambam writes there is, Hakone Bakarka Le'ib Beretz Yisrael in Trumos U'Meisos U'Shvius. As far as that is concerned, if you acquire land in Syria, you are like you are acquiring land in Israel as far as Truma, Meiser, and Shemitah, Midivrei Sofrim, it is a Derabanan. That's the way it works. Parenthetically, Reb Chaim and Reb Sammy asked the question during Seder last week of this business of you have to first get rid of Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael before you're able to take land elsewhere and give it Kedusha. Ostensibly, that still continues Bismanenu. But I haven't seen anyone discuss it, but I would think it still continues Bisman Hazeh. More to be said about this. We don't even know what the boundaries are, but it's worth thinking about. So Shemitah in Surya is a derabbanan. So writes the Rambam in Hilchos Trumos, and so wrote the Rambam in the source that we saw on the previous side in Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel regarding Surya. He says, Gazra Allah, they made this rabbinic decree about Shemitah in Surya so that Jews don't go move there. Okay. That's the idea. So what exactly is prohibited in Surya? Well, the Mishnah in Shviyas Perek Vav tells us you are allowed to work with talush, with produce that has been separated from the ground. You're not allowed to work the land. What about svichin, stuff that's growing wildly? So the Rambam writes in Shemitah V'Yovel Dalet Chavches, you see it here in Source Yud Gimel, Eber Ayardein dot dot dot, Sviche Surya Ve'Eber Ayardein Mutarin Ba'achila, you are allowed to eat the produce that grows wildly in Surya. And we discussed last week the Rambam's Kavul Chomer. We're not going back through that right now. One other very interesting source that you can't really omit in this discussion is the case of Yablona, which is found in Shviyas in the Rishalmi in Perek Vav Halacha Aleph. Did you guys see this? The Yablona story here. This is a very funny story. Rav Huna, boy Meshre Hahen Yavlona, Rav Huna, which is Rav Huna, wanted to permit this area of Yablona. But Rabbi Mana disagreed and would not sign on the decree. And you go through this whole discussion, and basically you learn that Antoninus gave Rebbe a 2,000-year lease for sharecropping in Yablona, and therefore it has the status of Nechal Avalo Nevad. Yes?
Are we saying 2,000 years, not 2,000 hectare field? It would be weird for me to give such a long contract.
It is weird, but then what do you do with the word Dishnin? Did you see Mefarshim on the Yerushalmi who said that?
Yeah. Common not to hear it quoted, also who they quoted.
Okay. I mean, you're right. 2,000 years is a long time. On the other hand, sorry, what, Rav Sammy? I mean, Rebbe is beginning of the third century, so yes, we still have the rights to Yablona. However, if you brought it to them, I think they would probably side with Chaim Knievsky and the Chazon Ish and say, "How do you know it's the Yablona?" Doshna Shal Yericho, but that doesn't help. He gave him 2,000. Oh, you're saying that it's the Deshan, meaning the space that produces rich produce. Okay, fine. Who are they quoting? Okay. All right. So if you find a street sign saying, or a sign on the highway saying Yablona, you can try to stake your claim, unless you're a Kohen or a Levi, and therefore not a descendant for sure of Rebbe. Okay, good. That brings us to the big question, the centerpiece of our discussion, which is the southern boundary of Eretz Yisrael. I wanted to talk about the northern boundary also, but there's just no time for it, so I just gave you a link at the end. I think I gave you a reference in the Chazon Ish and a link to an article that no longer exists, but maybe I couldn't find it on archive.org either, but maybe you could find it somewhere that discusses the northern border, but we're going to do southern border. In any case, Rechaim did it in his Chabura, presumably. Okay, so how far south does Israel go? So if you could flip to the end of the source sheet first, I gave you two maps. I want to look at the first map, please. The circle is not what it looks like. The circle is not supposed to be the extent of the land of Israel. That's not what it is. What it is, we will find out, God willing. But the specifics of this map are things we're going to see. I just want to highlight a couple of things for you. Specifically, if you look at the curve of the Mediterranean and you see a spot near Egypt or in Egypt called El Arish, that's Wadi El Arish. Wadi El Arish is a body of water sometimes. It is dry at other times. That's the nature of a wadi. Sometimes it's wet, sometimes it's not wet. And we're going to be using that as a major landmark in our discussion. If you were to go further west, you would hit the Nile, which we're going to have to talk about as well. Those are key points to know about. In the east, you see, you've got Yam HaMelech. The bottom of Yam HaMelech is marked with Sodom, if you can read the fine print. There is a line extending from the bottom of it, which we will have to discuss. That's supposed to be at a 45-degree angle from the bottom of Yam HaMelech, and that's going to be important. And then further south, you can see a city marked as Eilat, which is also going to matter in our conversation. All of these things are going to be relevant. So we have three different approaches to calculating the southern boundary of Israel. Approach number one is the using the landmarks found in Tanakh. Approach number two is the placement of the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge. Approach number three is the Rambam's latitude lines that he gives for the boundaries of Israel in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, when he describes where you see the moon for declaring the new month. So, unsurprisingly, using these approaches will give you different results. The first approach is the Tanakh approach. Look at Parshas Maaseh and look at Sefer Yehoshua. So if you take a look on your sheet at source number Tesvav, this is from Parshas Maaseh. Vayalachem Pa'as Negev. Here is your southern boundary, and it's going from east to west, which makes sense because the Jews are east at that point. Mimidbar Tzin al Yedei Edom, from Midbar Tzin at Edom, Edom being in the south. Vayalachem Gvul Negev Mikitzei Yam HaMelech Kedma. Your boundary will be from the eastern end of Yam HaMelech, of the Dead Sea, the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea, whatever you want to call it. That's your, so you're looking at the southeast corner of Yam HaMelech. You're going to move from there. The Nasav Lachem HaGvul Minegev. The boundary will turn for you. Nasav like Saviv. The boundary will turn for you from the south, L'Ma'alei Akrabim, to a place called Ma'alei Akrabim, which is a central problem for us, as we'll see. Va'avar Tzina, it will go to Tzin. Va'yutots Osav Minegev L'Kadesh Barnea. It will go south to Kadesh Barnea, south of Kadesh Barnea, it goes out to Chatzar Adar, it goes to Atzmon, ultimately to Nachal Mitzrayim and the Mediterranean. Okay, that is your description in Parshas Maaseh. In Yehoshua, it's roughly similar, running again east to west, from Midbar Tzin, the edge of Yam HaMelech, although he tells you here in Yehoshua, in Source Test Zion, Mikzei Yam HaMelech min ha-lashon ha-pone negba. There are tongues that extend out from Yam HaMelech, so it's the southern tongue of Yam HaMelech, and it's going to go to the south, to Ma'alei Akrabim, towards Tzin, south of Kadesh Barnea, Chatzar Adar, Atzmon, I just read my notes on a different part. It's going to go to the south to Ma'alei Akrabim. It's going to go towards Tzin. It's going to go up from there to Kadesh Barnea, to Chetzron, to Adar, to Karka, Atzmon, Nachal Mitzrayim. Now, there is another pasuk found in Yechezkel, which gives you different boundaries for the southern border. He names places we don't know anything about. He names Tamar. He talks about Memerivot Kadesh. Rav Yitzchak Goldhar published the Admas Kodesh in 1913, and he argued that that was also talking about the same border as Maaseh and Yehoshua, and he claimed that it put the southern border at Memerivot Kadesh, which he said was 60 kilometers south of Yam HaMelech. That was his argument. Nobody is on the same page. And Rezalman Menachem Korin, whose work I rely on for a lot of this, including that big map that I showed you before, wrote an article called Din Shvius Beshetach HaArava in Moriah, in Tafshin Nun Daled. He notes the Radak, who says, on that pasuk in Yechezkel, U'miktas ha'gvulim ha'ela nizkirim ba'torah, ela she'gadol yi'agvul Eretz Yisrael la'asib mima sha'aya. He says the boundary that Yechezkel is envisioning is talking about the future. It's larger than what you once had. So, and the Vilna Gaon says this also in a comment on Yehoshua Perek Yutes. So we don't actually stick with what Yechezkel has there. Reb Chaim, you look like you want to make a comment? No? Okay. So leaving aside the Psukim in Yechezkel, working with the Psukim in Bamidbar and Yehoshua, we need to identify certain things. We need to talk about the western end. What is Nachal Mitzrayim? We need to talk about the eastern end. What is the southern edge of Yam HaMelach? And we need to talk about the middle. Where is Maale Akrabim? How do I define any of these? So in terms of Nachal Mitzrayim in the west, the general approach is that this is what we call Wadi El Arish, the part that was marked on Rav Koren's map. It's a wadi, it is not a river. The Derech Emuna quotes the Radbaz and the Kaftor of Aferach, quoting Rav Sajagon to make this assertion, and it will fit actually relatively well with what we're going to see in the Rambam in Kiddush HaChodesh. The Rambam is going to give you the latitude lines. He's going to say it's the 30th parallel is the line that you want, the 30th parallel north, obviously, north of the equator. And that actually works with Wadi El Arish. There is a view, which you may have seen if you learned Rashi in Sefer Yehoshua, that it's actually the Nile. That Nachal Mitzrayim means the Nile. Rav Avram Benedict in Kovetz Beis Aaron v'Yisrael, volume 10, if you ever read that, it's put out by the Karlin Stolen Chasidim, and it's very, very good. He says, it can't be the Nile. That doesn't make any sense for it to be the Nile. Do you remember the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Ches, right? We're having all these discussions about the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael and all of that, and they talk about the Nasin Shebayam, the islands in the sea. Did that come up last week in your Chabura? Okay. Okay. So at one point on Daf Ches in Gittin, I didn't bring it on the source sheet, Rabbi Yehuda says that in order to define the islands west of Israel that are part of Israel, what you do is you take a northern part and you draw a line due west, and you take a southern part and you draw a line due west, all the way to the Atlantic. And all the islands between those lines are part of Israel. Got it? That's the Gemara again. That's Rabbi Yehuda. He says, that doesn't make any sense if Nachal Mitzrayim is the Nile. West of the Nile is land. Like, you would be including the whole southern border, like Morocco would now be part of Eretz Yisrael, because it's within those lines that you'd be drawing.
It's not an island, though. It's an island within the border.
So if you only mean an island within the border, the Benedict doesn't like that. And that's number one. Number two, Gemara Bava Basra Ayin Dalet Amud Beis lists the waterways that bound Israel. And it doesn't list the Nile. It also doesn't list Wadi El Arish, but that's not such a big deal because the Gemara only lists waters that emerge from the ground. And Wadi El Arish is a product of rainwater. So it's not the Nile. I did see an approach from Chaim Knievsky in the Derech Emuna, which I brought you in Source Yates, where he tried to harmonize it. Remember, the Nile is a weird river, right? Weird for those of us who grew up in, you know, the United States anyway, right? Rivers in the United States run north-south or south-north? North-south. Of course they run north-south. Same in Israel and most places in the world. However, the Nile runs south-north because of the topography. It's running downhill, south to north, to the Mediterranean. So the Derech Emuna argues that maybe the spot we're using in the Nile is a spot that is close to Wadi El Arish. That's his argument. You can see it there in Source Yates. You can call it the beginning or the end, depending on whether beginning means to you the source or whether it means north. But basically, we work with Wadi El Arish. That's our assumption. What about the eastern end, the southern edge of Yam HaMelach? So if Yitzhak Goldhar in his Admas Kodesh, which I mentioned before, is very excited, he says, oh, I know that. That's easy. If you take a look at Source Chaf, it's great. I retyped it for you on this. He's figuring out the boundaries of Israel, found in the Torah, found in Yechezkel. He says all these tourists, the Jews, the British, the Germans. Yes, correct. Tarei like Tarei Mataretz. I get it. Nonetheless, they can't figure it out. They got real problems with the northern border. Lo chein agvul adromi, but the southern border, that they can do. Asher shteketos kitzosav yiduos. Everybody knows the two edges. It goes from ktsei dromi shel yam hamelach to Nachal Mitzrayim sharavim korin lo wadi El Arish. He says, it's really easy. The problem is it's not easy. Because in the past 100 years alone, we've seen shifts of 370 to 400 meters below sea level in the height of Yam HaMelech. And if it shifts in height, you understand it's also shifting in breadth. Zev, Natanel, Jeffrey, online, are you able to like see my hand motions? Because I'm just frozen on my computer. Okay.
You're frozen. We can just hear you.
Okay. Sorry. So we've seen shifts of sea level height, which also means you're affecting the extent of it. So this is a major problem. If you look in Josephus, which I brought you in Source Chaf Aleph, he talks about Yam HaMelech, Lake Asphaltitis. And he gives you dimensions for it that it extends all the way to Tsoar in Arav, which archaeologists think is a place called Kfar Tzafi or Gor Safi, which is significantly east of today's southern tip of Yam HaMelech. It's not a modern thing that Yam HaMelech shifts. It has expanded and shrunk over the ages. Don't put this on climate change. There are many factors in Yam HaMelech. It has a lot to do with what's happening in the water that feeds the Yam HaMelech as well in the Yarden. But the bottom line is you can't define the southern edge. It's not simple and straightforward at all. The Mishnah's Yosef is quoted by Rav Efrati to say it's the site of the salt factories. Okay. I don't know what to do with that either. Yeah. So the southern edge of Yam HaMelech is hard to figure out. Yes, for Sammy. The boundary of Eretz Yisrael and the Kedushas HaAretz should move as Yam HaMelech moves?
Yes.
I would be scared about that claim.
It's a great way to
expand
Israel, the sixth of the Dead Sea.
Right. I'm trying to think through the implications of something like that. It sort of reminds me of the moving Kezias, right? The Stipler's position that the Kezias really changes based on what olives are where you are. You can keep to the old Shita until it becomes clear that olives don't fit, and then you have to remeasure based on your current olives. So sorry? We have the Yam HaMelech that Hashem wants us to have. Like the Chazon Ish on missing Sfarim. I can't argue that you're wrong, but it doesn't feel right. This time you have to observe Shemitah because they let more water into Yam HaMelech. Yes, fine. Okay. The intermediate marker, Malei Akrabim, is a lot of fun. Malei Akrabim of today is 45 kilometers southwest of the Dead Sea, whether that means anything or not. Rashi in Parashas Maaseh, which I brought you in Source Chav Beis, says, Malei Akrabim does what I would not have expected. When you read the Psukim, everybody other than Rashi assumes that, and here I'm going to gesture again in a way that is not visible on the video, I apologize, but everybody assumes Yam HaMelech, the bottom of Yam HaMelech is here, Wadi El Arish is here, roughly the same latitude, and Malei Akrabim is actually somewhere south between them. So the border is running southwest from the Dead Sea, and then it runs northwest towards Wadi El Arish. That's the general assumption people make. CMAP on last page, right, where you can see the curves. However, if you take a look at Rashi, he says, no, part I bolded in Source Chav Beis, Yotzei HaMeitzar V'okem Litzad Sfono Shel Olam Balach Son L'Ma'arav. He says Malei Akrabim is actually northwest of the end of the Dead Sea. The reason why we don't assume that Rashi is correct is because when it says V'nasav HaGavul Minegev, we assume that means the boundary is turning south. Rashi is not taking it that way. Rashi seems to think that it means the border goes there from the south. Minegev. The border turns up, heading north from the south. So Rashi is actually going to tell you that it goes up. The Derech Emunah does say something that is somewhat consistent with Rashi. If you take a look at Source Chaf Gimel, he says, Omnam gvul dromi shel Eretz Yisrael ein holech bekav yashar mamash minachal Mitzrayim l'tzei Yam HaMelech. He says the boundary doesn't go in a straight line from Yam HaMelech to Wadi El Arish. Daksiv parashas Maaseh v'nasav ha'gvul v'yatzah ha'gvul v'nasav, it turns, v'yatzah, it goes out. But he says it can't really go too far, which helps Rashi Shita versus some of the other ones. The Rav Korin believes in this idea as well, that it can't be much further than the southern edge of Yam HaMelech, and his argument is a relatively straightforward one. He says if it were too far south, it would end up being on the eastern boundary of Israel, right? In other words, if the boundary of Yam HaMelech, if south Yam HaMelech is here, right? Natala can't see me. Zev can't see me. Jeffrey presumably also. But if the bottom edge of Yam HaMelech is here, right? And Malei Akribim is here, like way south, Malei Akribim becomes part of the eastern boundary of Israel. The further south it is, the more likely you are to just say the eastern boundary runs down to here and then curves to here. It can't be too far south, Rav Korin argues. And therefore, turn back to the map that I showed you, the first map, and you see the 45-degree line that comes out of the bottom of Yam HaMelech, the eastern part of the south of Yam HaMelech. If you look at that boundary, he makes the argument that the 45-degree angle is what you should use to find Malei Akrabim. You have to read his article to see more about the 45-degree line and where he's placing it. But that's his view. The Admas Kodesh disagrees. We mentioned already, he thinks it's 60 kilometers south of Yam HaMelech. He's going based on the Psukim in Yechezkel. There are those who identify Petra in Jordan with Rechem on the eastern boundary of Israel, in the Gemara in Gittin, which is way south of Yam HaMelech. That's not going to work according to this. The Tevuot Haaretz thinks that Malei Akrabim is a place called Jabil Chanzira, which is 30 kilometers southeast of the Dead Sea. That's not going to work either. But the king of Shittos that are not accepted is Rabbi Chiya Mechelta Kaczynski in his Eretz Yisrael, in which he makes the argument that Malei Akrabim is actually near Eilat, 140 kilometers south of Yam HaMelech. And I brought it for you here on the sheet. I love Tokachinsky's Torah. He's great. But on this, like, no one is on the same page. Take a look at source Chafei. He says, Umikevan shemalei akrabim huktzei agvul hadromi, aleinu ladas bi'ikara yehu makom malei akrabim. He says, that's the essence of the southern boundary. We need to know where that is. He says you find different places that are identified. But the pasuk says so. He says it's supposed to be by Edom, right? We said that in the pasuk. Malei Akrabim is supposed to be by Edom. It's way south. Zot omeret al yad Eilat. He says it's got to be the by a lot by the eastern end of the Yam Suf. Yam Akaba, what is called today the Gulf of Akaba. That's where he wants to place this. The Omnam Anushomim Shrabenu Sadr Gaon Tirgay Malei Akrabim Akaba. Not only that, he says, if Sadr Gaon in his Aramaic translation translates Malei Akrabim as Akaba, Gulf of Akaba. Akaba, same place. Sorry? Yeah, what did I say? Oh, sorry, Arabic, correct, thank you. That's not going to be the biggest problem with Sadr Gaon's comment, though. So that's his position. He says that Malei Akrabim is, in fact, Eilat. He also does it in Ir HaKodesh V'Hamikdash, when he discusses Yom Tov Sheni in Eilat. In volume 3, page 248 of Yer HaKodesh V'Hamikdash. So Rav Korin is apoplectic. He says, that just can't be. He says, first of all, then it should be, the eastern boundary of Israel. You've rewritten the eastern boundary. Number two, it's going to not fit at all the Ir Miklat lines that we're going to see, as well as the Rambam lines. And he says, we have psukim like that say Eretz Edom with Eilat and Etzion Gaver is on Sfat Yam Suf. That's Edom. He says that's Edom proper. In other words, all of those are not part of Eretz Yisrael. They're part of Edom, land that isn't given to us. And he has a lot more. But one other piece that I had to note is this business of the Arabic of Sajagon. He says the word Aqaba in Arabic is ma'ale, a height. And what Rav Sajagon actually wrote was Aqaba Akrabim. Aqaba meant ma'ale, not this is the a he's not identifying it with Aqaba as a place. You follow? It's like you have the word mitzvah that appears all over Tanakh. It's not geographic identification. It's not a lot. There's a lot more to see. The Derech Emunah has all discussion about the bodies of water with the south of Israel, but bottom line is we can do reasonably well with the bottom of Yam HaMelach, sort of. We can do reasonably well with Wadi Al-Arish, for sure, in the west. Male Akribim is a lot harder. Zev, what are you looking up? Oh, something else. Yes?
How does it relate to the fact that we know the Jews were definitely living in Elad during the time of Bait Sheni, potentially even Bait Rishon, and how you do that archaeologically? Is it possible that Olei Bavel extended their borders beyond that point of Olei Mitzrayim?
So we generally assume that the Olei Bavel do not transcend Olei Mitzrayim. However, as I said in Shir last week, if you take the Kesef Mishnah's approach, that the expansions done by Chashmonoi kings count, then I think all bets are off. But that won't create, well, could it create Kedusha Shnia without Kedusha Rishona, effectively? Rav Sammy, is that in Shir next week? Is that why you're holding your head? Yeah, most people do not assume that. It would be very interesting to see an idea of that. Sorry? Yeah. I don't know, but what do you do with the Kesef Mishnah? Granted, he also renewed Smicha. I don't know. But that's all one method, the southern boundary method, based on the Psukim in Tanakh. The second method is Ir Miklat. There's a brisa brought in the Gemara in Makos Daf Tesamud Beis in Source Chav Vav. You're familiar with this when you're Maver Sedra. Tana Rabbanan. The brisa says Shalosh Mivdil Moshe Be'Ever Hayardain. Moshe divides. Moshe sets aside three cities that will become your miklat east of the Yardain. Uchenegdan Hivdil Yoshua Beretz Canaan, and Yoshua sets up three parallel to them in Canaan, which becomes Israel. Umechulvanos Hayuk Min Shtei Shiro Shemekarim, and they're aligned with each other. So there's a city here and a city here. There's a city here and a city here. A city here and a city here. And further, the Torah says, V'shilashta, shiumishulashin. V'shilashta, eskivul artzacha, you shall divide it in thirds, which really means quarters. And Rashi explains it. I brought you in Source Chav Zayin. The idea is, it's actually fifths, really, when you get down to it. If you were to measure the distance from the upper boundary of Israel to the first city of refuge, it would be the same distance from there to the second city of refuge. So let's pretend, let's make up a number. Let's say it's 30 kilometers from the northern border of Israel to the top one. Then it'd be 30 kilometers to the second one and 30 kilometers to the third one. And then 30 kilometers to the southern boundary of Israel. Isn't that a really neat and easy way for you to find the southern boundary of Eretz Israel? That's magic. Not only that, the Rambam says it's precise measure. Take a look at Source Chavches. V'chein moshchin being called ir ve'ir me'ari miklat. They measure from city to city, b'tchilas hafrashasan, when they are first set aside, ad shiyu mishulashos b'shavet, to the point where they will be entirely even in their division. So if so, I know that the cities in the western side of the Yarden are Kadesh, Shechem, and Chevron. I don't know where Kadesh is. But I can reasonably tell you, disclaimers about geography notwithstanding, where Shechem and Chevron were. To within a kilometer, I hope. You could definitely say that. You can basically say where those are. Therefore, I can also calculate where Kadesh is. Because I know the distance between Shechem and Chevron. And therefore, I can also calculate the northern and southern borders, right? Go back to our picture, the first picture. And now you understand what that circle is about. Right? They're trying to show you Shechem at the top of the circle to Chevron. That's your radius. And then extending the radius further south, that will give you the southern boundary. It's a very short southern boundary, right? Your southern boundary of Israel is now the bottom of that circle. This isn't the sum of Israel, because you still have to go north from Shechem to get to Kadesh, and then north from there to get to the northern boundary. But that's what that circle is doing there on the map. So a major advocate of this view is Rav Avram Benedict, the one who I quoted from the Kohetz Beis Aharon v'Yisrael. He says, according to this, you have a southern border south of the Dead Sea at 30.7 degrees latitude, a little higher than the 30-degree latitude one that we had before. A northern border that's about, he says, about Meron and Svat, 33.7 degrees latitude. And he bolsters this by saying that this would parallel the lands taken on the eastern side of the Yardane that we talked about last week. So that's your second shita. Clear? Then you have your third shita. Third shita is the Rambam and Hilchas Kiddush HaChodesh. And I see we're running out of time, so I want to make sure that we can get to as much of this as possible and try to explain it. Otherwise, I'll record an extra piece and send it out. But what the Rambam writes, and I brought it for you on the sheet in source Lamed, is when you see the moon, you have to be in. The moon has to be visible in Israel and the lands west of it. I'm going to sum it up outside of the Rambam. But you can see the Rambam that I'm referring to in Lamed, Lamed Aleph, and Lamed Beis. I gave it to you there. He says, Eretz Yisrael is between the latitude line 30 degrees north and 35 degrees north. You see it, I bolded it in the second paragraph in source Lamed. Between 30 and 35 degrees, that's where Israel is. Fascinating. Now, there are two problems with this idea. Rav Koren explains how this doesn't contradict the Yam HaMelech line, but I'm not going to go into it right now. But there are two fundamental problems with this. Problem number one is that in the part that I brought you in Lamed Aleph, he says Yerushalayim is in the center of Israel at 32 degrees north, and Israel goes from 29 degrees to 35 degrees. So he just told me Israel is 30. Now he tells me Israel's 29. It also does not match the boundaries that we have. Rav Benedict notes that with these latitude lines, all of our markers for the boundary of Israel are way off. Our Emikla, Malakrabim, they all don't fit this. So there are four solutions that I've seen. Solution number one is the Rambam didn't mean to establish geographic boundaries with this. He only wanted to give guidelines for when the moon is going to be visible in Israel. Honestly, though, that doesn't really work. Because if you look in Nud Aleph Yud Zayin, in source Lamed Aleph, the Rambam says, I'm giving you these boundaries because the moon is only visible because Re'iyah for the new moon is only done in Israel, the beginning of source Lamed Aleph. Fisha Re'iyah Lotia Ela Be'eretz Yisrael. That's why I'm doing this. So that's a hard answer to give. The Rambam was serious. Rav Efrati floats the idea that the Rambam was working with a different degree system. Because the Kaftor V'Ferach, who is in France in the 13th century into the 14th, uses degrees for some of his places that don't match ours. The problem is that the system of degrees that the Rambam was using was in place already in the days of Ptolemy 1,000 years earlier. The longitude won't match because they didn't put the zero line in Greenwich, but the latitude lines were at the equator. And not only that, the Rambam's latitude for Yerushalayim matches ours just fine. So it's hard to give that answer. Third answer is that the Rambam is talking about the border of the area from which witnesses would come, not the border of Eretz Yisrael. But that's also difficult because the Rambam says they travel up to 24 hours from when they see the moon. That's the boundary, as I brought you in source Lamed Beis, not this boundary we're working with here. So Rav Benedict gives you an answer from Rav Yaakov Emden, and he says the answer that I think has to be the answer, which is that the boundary that the Rambam is referring to is the land promised to Avraham. You have to note when you read the Rabbi Yaakov Emden in the Moruk Tzia and Lamed Gimel, I noted it there, the word rochav, when he talks about the width of the land, he means north-south. I think because, remember, they used to put east as the top of the map. Maybe that's why he does it, but he uses the term rochav, he means north-south. But in any case, his point is, this was the land promised to Avraham. The land we actually took is a narrower band, in which case this becomes useless as a way to define things. There's more to be said on this, but I'm skipping a little bit in the interest of finishing by 1230, or finishing something by 1230 anyway. I have more to be said. But fundamentally, current halachic positions regarding these areas governed by the southern border, first of all, Eilat is out, but the Arava could be in. We know Rav Yechiel Melchata Kaczynski thinks it's in because he put Malei Akribim all the way down at Eilat. When I say the Arava, for those who are not familiar with the map, if you look on the Rav Koren's map, the first map, underneath that 45-degree angle line, that whole area south of Yam HaMelech, is called the Arava. So Rav Tukachinsky is going to think that the Arava is in, for sure. Rav Koren wants to use the Ir Miklat line, which clearly omits Eilat, of course, and it will omit the Arava as well. Rav Yehosef Schwartz in his Tvuos Haaretz and others say the southern line is Nachal Tzin, which you see at the bottom of that circle. So that is south of the Ir Miklat line in parts, but north of it as you head east. But it's roughly the same place. Clearly, again, Eilat is out. The Arava will be out as well. The Chazon Ish, and then I'll take your question, Reb Chaim. The Chazon Ish is quoted in a variety of places as saying Eilat is Chutz La'aretz, as far as he's concerned. Eilat is out. Even Yatvata, north of Eilat, is out. Orchos Rabbeinu has that Eilat is at least suffolk of being outside of Israel regarding Truma and Meiser and Yom Tov Sheni. There's a nice discussion there. I gave you the reference to it, but I wasn't going to retype it in Source Lamed Hey in the Orchos Rabbeinu, but it's worth seeing it. But basically, the consensus is that Eilat should not be included there. He also has an Orchos Rabbeinu with discussion about Yom Tov Sheni in Eilat, which Tzitz Eliezer, I think, also discusses. But regarding the Arava, it's less clear. Rav Zalman Menachem Koren points out that in the Chazon Ish's day, there were no agricultural settlements in the northern Arava, that area up by Yam HaMelech. They didn't have them. They were only in the west, north of Ashkelon. So therefore, you can't take anything he says as definitive regarding those. You can take it regarding Eilat, but you can't take it as definitive regarding those. So the Arava, and take a look now at the second map, the last map on the sheet, really depends on the year. In some years, they seem to think it's in. In some years, they seem to think it's out. It really does seem to shift. Last note, actually, I'm not going to take your question yet because I want to get this in, and it's already 1229, is Aza. So the Tzitz Eliezer quotes the Gemara in Shabbos to show it's obvious to the Gemara this is part of Eretz Yisrael. They talk about the birds in Aza, which did not go into Galut. It's part of Israel. And that fits with putting Nachal Mitzrayim as Wadi El Arish. It makes perfect sense. Rav Koren does note this bizarre line in the Rambam, in Source Lamed Zayin, Hilchos Trumos, Perek Aleph, Halacha Zayin, who says, what is the land that the Olei Mitzrayim took? And he tells you Ashkelon is Derom Eretz Yisrael. Ashkelon is the southern boundary of Israel. What in the world do you do with that? So Rav Yaakov Emden has a long discussion of this in the Moruk Tzi. I brought you in Source Lamed Ches, saying all of the land of the Plishtim is in. And he brings arguments different ways. He doesn't like Shabbos Kuf Memhe, but he brings other arguments for it. I gave Shir on this a few years ago about Avraham being in Beersheba when Sarah dies in Hebron, and Avram trying to consecrate the land. If you look at the Rishonim in the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah, you see a lot of information about it there. But the consensus is that land of the Plishtim is indeed included, Bizmanenu, as part of what should be in. Whereas the Arava changes each way. So I hope this was somewhat helpful. I hope it wasn't too helpful. No, I hope it was somewhat helpful and somewhat clear. What we've accomplished, again, after our initial discussion about the lack of emuna in the takanos and the enactments that were made, we've established Mitzrayim and said that Shemitah is out. Shemitah is not an issue in Mitzrayim. Regarding Surya, we said that it will apply midrabanan. And in terms of the southern boundary of Israel, we can say roughly southern edge of Yam HaMelech or southeastern end of Yam HaMelech. It would be better, I think, if we could figure out where it was as opposed to where it is today, Rav Sami's idea notwithstanding. Western end of it, Wadi El Arish. In the middle, we're just confused, and it really depends on which line you're going to draw. The Rambam's line is very hard to work with, this 30-degree line. But you have the option of using the Irmiklot calculation or trying to locate Malay Akrabim in one of the other ways. Aza is in, Eilat seems to be out, and the Arava depends on what the Rabbanut paskins in a given year. Questions, comments? 59 minutes and 53 seconds. Ha. Questions? Sorry for the folks online. I apologize for my signal quality. I hope that in the future it'll be better. But that is what we have right now.
The source in 41 doesn't open for me.